I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast. Presented by Allied Home Security.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you tuning in. Appreciate you getting up with us. We're with you till 10 a.m. Monday through Friday, 5 days a week, Payne and Pendergast. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Seth, I feel like the Astros start to the season where they got out to a 6-1 start. Now that they're 6-6, it felt like we got a week off for good behavior. Like we got out of Houston sports prison for a week, for a wedding or something like that, you know, where they had to send a couple of feds with us to the wedding to make sure that we didn't go on the lam or anything. But we got to do some fun things for a week, and now when they got to 6-1, they cuffed us and they brought us back into the prison that is Houston sports 2021. And now the Astros have lost 5 in a row. But not only that, they've lost half their starting lineup to, at the very least, contact tracing for COVID of some sort.
We went from our choice of chicken or steak for the entree to nothing but soupy baked beans.
That's right.
And the cook hates us.
Yes.
These are like the old... You know, when you go through the prison cafeteria lineup and the cook is smoking a cigarette and dripping ashes into your soupy baked beans?
Yes.
That's exactly what we got right here.
We are in soupy baked bean territory, absolutely.
And pretty much it sounds like several of the Astros might have soupy baked beans for bowel movements right now because
yes.
Everybody's sick. The only thing I'm hoping, this is what I'm holding my hopes on, everybody, and for anybody listening – Astros were put into a COVID protocol immediately before the game. So you had to bring in 5 guys from your alternate training site. And it would take a lovely drive up from Corpus. And then Lance McCullers, who scuttled his way through a few innings, also ended up, we learned afterwards, he was really sick too.
Yeah.
And also Brantley's sick. So I'm hoping that COVID protocol stuff was maybe not any kind of contact stuff, but maybe just that guys are sick and they had to be careful about it. And once they test positive or negative a couple times, they'll be back. That's what I'm hoping, that there's some relief from this agonizing baseball we've been watching.
Yeah. So here is James Click. This is James Click, the Astros general manager, before the game on the guys going into the or going onto the COVID list.
They're on there as a result of the health and safety protocols.
Have you guys had a positive test?
Well, we can't comment on it beyond saying that the players have been placed on the health and safety protocol reasons.
Do you have any idea how long they'll be out?
That will depend on the subsequent testing that we will be performing on them.
Okay, so here's one more from James Click on getting the guys. And by the way, the prominent names that went onto this list, Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Yordan Alvarez, and Martin Maldonado. So those are 4 of your everyday regulars in your starting lineup. One more from James Click on getting these guys back.
We're going to put everybody, even those who have not been identified as direct contacts or people who have fallen into health and safety protocols, everybody will go through increased frequency of testing, and we'll continue to work with our infectious disease specialists and Major League Baseball's joint committee to continue to look at the results of those tests. Hopefully those tests start coming back negative, and then as soon as they do, then we can apply for reinstatement.
Okay, so a few things here, Seth, real quick before we react to this, is that my understanding is that the Astros have had their first vaccination shot, but most of them have not had their second vaccination shot. So once you get the team, I think it's 85% vaccinated,
yep.
Then they lower the standards a little bit for what constitutes protocols inside the building there. As far as getting these guys back, this is per Michael Schwab, who covers the Astros. I see he tweets about them quite a bit. 2 types of contacts when it comes to this stuff. If you're wondering, okay, when I just care about when these guys are going to play baseball again. Close contact, you have to quarantine for 7 days. Extra scrutiny contacts, which means we're a little suspicious, but just to be cautious, we're going to put these guys on the list. You need 2 negative tests to return.
Okay.
So the hope is that these guys are all the latter, that they're the extra scrutiny contacts. They test today, Hopefully they test negative. Today's a travel day, thank God, for the Astros. And then they go to Seattle this weekend. So hopefully it's extra scrutiny contacts, and then these guys are missing just a game or two.
I wonder if there a whole spectrum? Is there like extra scrutiny observation?
Double secret scrutiny.
Yeah, there's like casual glances, right. Observation.
Not that I'm aware of.
Like, I'm going to keep an eye on you, bro. I'd like there to be seven different levels. And some of it's just kind of like, maybe stay away from that guy for a bit.
Right.
Just kind of ostracize him. You pull a Greinke, he'll be sitting up with some, you know, down the first baseline, between right field and down the, like, the extended first baseline.
Yeah.
Those sections seem pretty sparse.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. But those seem particularly sparse where it's packed in right down the first baseline.
Well, I'm guessing it's packed down the first baseline because those are people that are season ticket holders that chose to keep their seats, and it makes the other areas look a whole lot more sparse for sure.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, and also, and those are the areas too where there's some areas where there was no social distancing guaranteed, and then there's other areas where it was guaranteed.
Yeah, and
so
the
extended first baseline must be where, like, there was social distancing guaranteed, but a lot of other people said, wait a second, for the same price I can get first baseline, I'll take my chances.
Yeah, and those
extra,
are their
extra scrutiny.
And those are their season tickets, so they're opting to stay in their seats, and they're not as nervous. They're probably vaccinated, not as nervous about the COVID. And at the end of the day, you're only allowed to have 50% capacity. So if, yeah, you know, if a majority of those people are crammed into the first and third baselines down in the 100s, then it stands to reason the rest are going to be scattered about pretty sparsely.
I kind of like the idea of social distancing, just not even for COVID's sake, but just because people make me uneasy.
Hell yeah.
But except that one thing I've noticed with the minimal attendance at some of these games is, man, whole lot of scrambling for foul balls. I don't need, like, if I'm, like, out of duty almost,
yeah,
you know? If I'm one of only several people in a section, every time there's a foul ball, I'm going to be like, all right, I guess I got a shot at this.
You're more of a ball boy than a fan. You're like,
yeah,
I got to go get this. I got to go chase this ball down over here. I'm going to look lazy on TV.
Or if you got a kid with you,
right,
like, oh, great, this little bastard's going to want this thing. All right, I got to go. Oh, sorry, I just missed out on it.
So the broader picture with the Astros, you know, the bigger story probably is these guys going on this COVID list, just because it's a reminder that COVID, at least administratively, COVID is still a thing with respect to sports. The bigger problem, Seth, is they're not good at baseball right now. as you pointed out, they are – not only are they losing games, they're kind of getting their souls crushed early in these games. You know what I mean? Like, they falling behind 4-0 to the A's before you're even halfway through the game. And then in all three of these games against Detroit, before you even get to the fourth inning, you look up and you're already, you know, probably at like a 10% win probability in the fourth inning. You know, they've
gigantic deficits.
Yes.
Brian McTaggart tweeted it out Saturday. It was 4-0 in the fifth inning.
Yeah.
Monday, 4-0 in the third inning.
Yeah.
Tuesday, 5-1 in the fourth to,
yeah,
Detroit. Wednesday, 3-0 in the second.
Sucks.
And then last night, what was it? It was 6-0 in the fourth? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was it's been some depressing early innings baseball to watch.
Yeah.
It's not been fun, and then the bats have not come alive at all. Like, there's no part of you right now that feels like, well, hey, it is the Astros, so just hang on for the eighth or ninth inning because we might be in for a 6-run deluge. It just hasn't worked out that
way. Yeah, when it's gone poorly for the Astros, the you know, last year it went poorly more often than not in the regular season. They were 29-31, but even in the seasons when they were great and things were going poorly, the things that we were seeing towards the end of last night's game is what ailed them. They're not, you know, they failed with runners in scoring position. They had two great chances last night to score some runs late in the game, and boy, what a great win that would have been to come back from down 6-0 with half your lineup out with COVID, and they gave themselves opportunities. It's just, I mean, this is where this COVID thing comes back to roost. Bases loaded. Who, they've got something going? Abraham Toro to the plate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that would normally be Alex Bregman coming up to the plate.
That's the part where at least it's a little bit easier last night. Okay, yeah. I mean,
yeah, they were competitive at least last night.
You were, but you had, I mean, you had people pressed into service. You know, it still wouldn't have mattered. Aledmys Diaz could have handled that one, that ball right at that rocket up the middle early on a little bit better than he did, or at least put a stop to it.
Yeah.
Thank God this was only a 3-game series because I'm about done with Badu. This Badu character.
Oh, no.
I got no love in my heart for him. But I'll make excuses for them. Lance was super ill. AJ Hinch is obviously cheating. I think it's pretty obvious.
Clearly,
he's
just
a big cheater. You saw the little part where where Lance was talking about how, you know, now that the Astros have more personnel spread around the league, there's more people out there that understand their tendencies and everything.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure AJ Hinch is cheating. I'm just joking. Don't sue me like Joe West sued people.
yes, be careful. I don't got half a mil.
I want to say this. I'll give Lance credit, sick as he was. The fact that he only hit two batters was a minor miracle last night, because he was it was like a scatter gun out there, man. That he was spraying flack everywhere.
He was. It was not a good night for Lance McCullough. He didn't even think they should have played the game last night because of all the COVID stuff. We'll get into that as we roll on with the show. There is news on the Deshaun Watson front. Just when you go eat dinner, you sit down and it's like 6:30 and you're like, this will be a day with no Deshaun Watson news. And then you remember, oh no, that's right. All the news with Deshaun Watson drops after 9 o'clock at night. There is additional lawsuit action going on right now with Deshaun Watson. We'll get you up to speed on all of it next. Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610. All right, statement last night from Tony Busby. He is the attorney for
Who's
the
that?
He's an attorney, Seth. He's a prominent attorney in town. I don't know if you've heard about this Deshaun Watson situation. It's a little perplexing.
Busby's a catchy name. I feel like he must have changed that at some point. Like it used to be just B-U-S-B-Y or something.
But with a Z.
Busby.
Yeah.
Yeah, Busby has a little bit more flair to it.
Yeah, the Z. You know, the kids these days with their Zs and things and whatnot. So anyways.
He should have named himself Waspy.
Yeah, there you go.
Except that now turns into like the old, you know, like, yeah. he's kind of Waspy.
Right.
You know,
right.
he's
back to the statement
lame
here.
White dude.
Statement from Tony.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Statement from Tony Busby last night. The Busby Law Firm filed its 23rd case against Deshaun Watson for allegations of assault and harassment. The woman in this newest case did not file as a Jane Doe. Instead, she chose to name herself. The cases are now consolidated without an official order in one court. All women have voluntarily identified themselves. These brave women now feel emboldened and will not be intimidated. As said before many times, we're proud to represent these women to seek justice on their behalf and stand up for survivors everywhere. Time's up is how he finished the statement. Time's up. So a 23rd lawsuit filed. Now, we should point out that one of the original 22, and they use the words for now, has pulled back and withdrawn the lawsuit. So there's a net still of 22 lawsuits against Deshaun Watson, but this is a 23rd one that's been filed. One of the 23 is now out for now. So if you're keeping score at home, that's where we are. And this one was a
This one was a
freelance makeup artist that Deshaun
allegedly.
She was
training to be an esthetician. Yeah. Wasn't trained in massage or anything.
Right.
So we've seen this a couple times now where Deshaun has allegedly kind of talked somebody who doesn't do massage into doing massage. Of the plaintiffs, 9 of them are licensed massage therapists.
Yes.
The rest are not. Some of them are licensed estheticians or people that are training to be massage therapists. And some of them are just women that he talked into giving, allegedly talked into giving him a massage. As Rusty Harden claims that he told, or excuse me, as Tony Busby says he told Rusty Harden, what did he use? Did he use the word weird? Your client's got a weird problem, or your client's
You're talking about that Washington Post article?
So in the Washington Post article, Tony Busby says that when he initially reached out to Harden, he said, quote, "Your guy's got some kind of weird problem, alleged problem. This
right.
is already spiraling in a bad direction. Why don't we try to resolve this now?" Unquote. So the alleged problem, it is a weird one, man. Like if all of this is true, it paints a picture of a guy who is kind of on the prowl, looking for like a guy who's almost trying to talk various non-escorts into being escorts,
right,
or non-prostitutes into being, like, he's trying to turn them, you know? Or wait, what is it? Is it when you turn them out? Is that when, like, a pimp turns out a woman?
Not sure.
I don't know what the phrase is. Oh, Sean, don't play coy with me. Whatever. Like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't even know the lingo you're talking about.
What's a prostitute?
Prostitution. I've never heard such sacrilege. So that is a weird problem. It's a weird alleged problem, according to all these lawsuits.
The article that Seth is referring to, the Washington Post article, and again, if you're just getting in your car, another lawsuit filed last night, a 23rd lawsuit, 22 remain in play. One of them has withdrawn their lawsuit for now, the plaintiffs. This Washington Post article and the writer's name, his last name is Hobson. He's going to be on In the Loop today. Landry texted me last night. Will Hobson is his name. And it's an interview, basically it's an interview, about an hour-long interview with Tony Busby that they did recently, where Busby kind of laid out the chronology of what's led us all to this. And I think the big takeaway from the article, Seth, is that, at least from Busby's perspective, Deshaun Watson's inner circle, prior to Rusty Harden getting there, botched this thing royally. As we've pointed out last week, when Busby released the email chain of Scott Gatfield, who was Deshaun's legal representation pre-Harden, Gatfield kind of not taking Busby and his team very seriously, not taking plaintiff number one very seriously when they were looking for a settlement. Busby basically saying, don't mess with Texas at the end of the email chain. He may as well have been saying that. That's not what he said, but he may as well. This is Houston, Texas, and you're going to learn. Here are a couple quotes from the article. Busby said that he told Watson's camp, let me tell you how this is going to go down. This is when Busby was representing Solis looking for a settlement. Let me tell you how this is going to go down. I'm going to file the case. The press is going to pick it up. It's going to be a circus, and Deshaun's going to have to hire Rusty Harden. Busby says, and here we are. And he was right. If that indeed is what he told them, he nailed it. He said, this guy, Gatfield, was so clueless about how things work. And then he also says the other money quote in there, because of COVID, Deshaun was reaching out to dozens of different people on Instagram for massages. Because of COVID, you would think he would have one person who had tested negative to give him the massages, which is actually a great point to counter the COVID defense that Rusty Harden was putting forth last week for Deshaun, which was, hey, look at all the dates of all these massages in these lawsuits all took place after COVID got here. So Deshaun's regular massage therapist wasn't there. Well, yeah, but I don't know that the safest thing to do is to reach out to 50 different people that haven't been vaccinated yet.
You know what the counter to that would be? I think that's one where you concede, just like they've already conceded that he was at the very least seeking consensual sexual encounters.
Yeah.
I think you almost concede and say, well, yeah, he was more concerned with his massages than he was worried about COVID at that point.
Maybe.
So there he goes.
Clearly.
If I were Harden, that would be my legal response to that, I suppose.
What'd you think of this article?
The picture of, now this is all from Busby's perspective,
yes,
but I have, you know, slowly and gradually become more and more of a fan of Tony Busby as this thing is played out. The Scott Gatfield character, the guy that was the lawyer for Deshaun's agency, for Deshaun's agent, I get so many different images in my mind when I think of Busby interacting with this smarmy Yale-trained lawyer. And the one that I'm thinking of right now is in Good Will Hunting, where the fancy Harvard kid thinks he's gonna embarrass Will Hunting,
yeah,
this lowly janitor townie
yes,
type
yes,
from South Boston, and Will Hunting just slaps him upside the head verbally.
Basically,
that's what Busby is doing right now.
Basically, threatened to take him outside and beat his ass.
But he didn't have to because he just exposed him for the intellectual fraud that he was.
That's right.
And that's what Busby's doing right now.
Yeah.
He's exposing that Gatfield character for the fraud that he was in that situation. Like, he had no idea what he was doing.
Yep.
He had no idea what he was doing.
Yeah, highly recommend this Washington Post article. Will Hobson is the name of the writer, and he'll be on In the Loop today. I'll text Landry and find out what time. But it's a really, and Seth, you're right, it's from Tony Busby's perspective, so we've got to acknowledge that. This is not, but it's Busby's perspective on how we got here. So he's honestly painting Deshaun's inner circle to be incompetent when it comes to handling endeavors like Deshaun is involved in right now. All right, we'll stick with this for another few minutes. Mike Florio, looking at the other side of this and how Rusty Harden is handling things, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, NBC, He got a little snippy about something Rusty Harden did earlier this week in defending Deshaun Watson. We'll tell you what it is next. Good to be with you on a Thursday morning here, Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. So, as we know, Seth, we first found out that one of the, at the time, 22 lawsuits against Deshaun Watson. If you're just waking up and you didn't hear the news, there was a 23rd lawsuit filed against Deshaun Watson last night. A lot of similar allegations to what we've seen in the previous 22. But of the original 22, one of those 22 had been dismissed, had pulled out of the litigation. For now is the latest news on that one. But we first learned of that from a Tom Pelissero tweet when Tony Busby a couple nights ago put out a statement saying, we're just going to go ahead and disclose the names of all these women because we're not scared of Deshaun Watson and his team. You know, the court said we need to do 14 of them. We're waiting on the others. We're just going to go ahead and resubmit all of them. Kind of a move that you know, a bravado bit of move from the Busby camp. Tom Pelissero tweeted shortly thereafter. Pelissero is with the NFL Network. He said, and I thought this was interesting the way it read, Watson's attorney Rusty Harden tells me one of the women who accused Watson of sexual misconduct has dropped her civil suit. Quote, we believe we have names for 20 of the 22. We've got one dismissed and we're looking for one more name. And what was interesting to me about that was, Tom Pelissero's got a direct line to Rusty Harden. Rusty Harden tells me one of the women who accused Watson, because we know that Rusty Harden has been largely doing his talking to the media up until last Friday through statements. Statements issued by his law firm to the media. He did a press conference on Friday of last week that you could access via Zoom, and if you were there in person, you could ask questions. And it's been a much more sort of mass media approach by Rusty Harden as opposed to having specific people in the media that he was talking to on the record like he is with Pelissero. So that was interesting. Like, okay, well, Tom Pelissero, you know, Rusty Harden is comfortable telling him things that nobody else had. Pelissero was breaking news at that point. He broke the news that one of the lawsuits had been dismissed. So that's interesting enough. What I found interesting was Mike Florio, who is both attorney and media member. Tell me if you think Florio feels jilted when I read this to you, Seth.
Okay.
The other interesting wrinkle here is that Harden has opted to become a scoop merchant, telling only one reporter one specific piece of information in a not...
This is Florio.
Yes, this is Florio. This is Florio. This is Florio.
This is Florio.
This is Florio saying this. Yes.
So
this is Florio. Okay. This is Florio reacting to Tom Pelissero getting a scoop directly from Rusty Harden. You ready? The other interesting wrinkle here is that Harden has opted to become a scoop merchant, telling only one reporter one specific piece of information in a not so subtle effort to nudge the coverage that Harden's getting by helping reporters do their jobs and secure broader credit and acknowledgement for securing information. Issuing a general statement to a broader list of reporters gives no one credit for any specific development. However, developing a short list of reporters to whom Harden will selectively give information subtly recruits those reporters to refrain from expressing any criticism of the lawyer's tactics or the merits of his client's case. In other words, Pelissero, you are bought and sold by Rusty Harden.
No,
you little scoop merchant bitch.
It's just so funny that it's Florio saying this.
Yes.
I'm like, whose website
is built on getting scoops from time to time.
Yeah. And this wasn't even, this was transparent.
Right.
It's not like Pelissero said, sources tell me or anything.
Rusty Harden tells me one of the women accused has withdrawn her lawsuit.
Feels like Florio might be a little insecure himself about something. Like, hey, Florio, you know what? Probably Florio's so tired of people saying, like, well, name your source. So when Pelissero just flat out says, like, well, it's this guy. This guy's – because this is what I'll say to some of the listeners. Like, sometimes the source is – like, when somebody says a person close to player X – sometimes the source is player X, but they're protecting the player by saying a source close to player X.
Yeah.
So, that's interesting. I mean, now everything he says is true. You do have to be careful as a journalist, that you don't, and this happens. You see it all the time. Sometimes writers trust their sources a little too much. Like they formed a relationship with him, and they got to be constantly a little bit cynical about, like, all right, wait a second, is this guy actually telling me the truth? And I think a lot of times when writers make a mistake, it's It's rarely, in my opinion, because a writer is actually trying to tell a mistruth.
Yeah.
It's because they trusted a source a little too much, or they got burned by somebody. So here, Pelissero is being pretty transparent and saying, well, this is what Harden told me. So, and I think that, yeah, this is the game that both these guys, both Busby and Harden, are going to play at some point, where you try to, you try to gain some trust in the media, and then sometimes it just happens. Sometimes it just happens that you catch a guy chatting when he wants to chat. Like, I know a lot of things that I never say publicly.
Yes.
Just because I'm not a reporter.
Right.
And it's really frustrating sometimes. It's super frustrating. But I don't want to live in that world where people, like, you know, when they talk to me, they're thinking, well, gosh, is Seth actually going to say this publicly or not?
Yeah.
But sometimes people will tell you stuff not because they were planning on telling you, but just because you're in a conversation and things get loose and they feel like telling you. So I don't, for Florio to, I guess, what did Florio say there? Florio said, basically, I think if I were an attorney, I would object and say argumentative or what, I don't know. Cause he's saying that he's claiming that Harden is doing this for a specific strategy. Where that's, oh, it's speculative. You're speculating. Florio's speculating that this is why he's doing it, but there's no proof that he's actually doing it.
Yeah, it just could be that Pelissero called Rusty Harden on a night where he decided to pick up the phone. You know what I mean? He doesn't have Pelissero's number in his phone, and Rusty Harden's one of those guys that he doesn't let it go to voicemail. Sometimes he picks it up. It's Tom Pelissero, and I could see where Rusty Harden would get a little folksy talking to somebody.
It's funny. James Palmer. I should find James Palmer from the NFL Network. I'll have to ask him his permission. When I spoke to a career day a few weeks ago, I asked James Palmer to, because it was all via Zoom.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, how can I bring a little something extra to this career day? So I had Ross Tucker and James Palmer, Brandon Scott, who works for us.
Sean Pendergast. Christ's sakes.
I had some of these guys record videos. I was talking to the listeners, Sean. I was going to get to you. I was saving you for last.
Thank you.
So I know you know I did this.
That's true.
But one of the things that James Palmer said was basically like, you know, my job is to basically talk to people. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing when you start talking to people, some of the things they'll tell you. Oftentimes things they really shouldn't be telling you.
Yes.
Like, it's just, that's advice for anybody, really. It's amazing how many people talk loosely, like way more loosely than you would expect them to talk.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of reporters that's where they get a lot of their information, really, is that they're just constantly talking to people. And it might have been that Pelissero was just talking to Harden, and it felt like this is a time when Harden wanted to divulge this little tidbit.
Yeah, you know, when you and I learn stuff like that that's off the record, not supposed to be divulged, I think the main thing it helps us with is it helps us formulate our opinions. You know what I mean? Like, you're a little more educated, you got a little more background on certain issues and chronology of certain things and whatnot. Florio here, Seth, I can come to no other conclusion other than Florio is completely jealous of Tom Pelissero right now. Like, that Pelissero got this scoop, and he's contending that this is going to – basically, he's saying this is going to make Tom Pelissero some sort of lackey for Rusty Harden and Deshaun Watson's camp.
And it's just funny because what a lot of people accuse Florio of is being a lackey for agents.
Yes.
You know? And I'm guessing he would object to that. That's where it feels. Florio, it's so fun. I encourage everybody to just read Pro Football Talk and just only read the Florio articles, because it's almost like a psychological case profile at times, where he like lashes out, because he's not a reporter either. It's not like he's trained as a reporter. So he lets his own personal feelings seep into a whole lot of stuff.
Man.
He gets right. Remember Schefter one year? Schefter tweeted out at the end of the draft that he'd been working for like 72 straight hours or something. And Florio was irate over Schefter. He said, a lot of us have been working this long, Schefter. Nothing special about this. Like, all right, we'll give you a pat on the head, little Mikey. You're okay, too.
Little Mikey. Little Mikey Florio. Text message. You can text or call the show, 713-572-4610. My favorite quote from the Washington Post article is Busby joking. This was funny. Where Busby joked at the very end that he bet $100,000 that Watson wishes he had paid the initial $100,000.
Oh, my gosh. Where, you know, it was $100,000. It probably would have been less if, like, with a little bit of negotiation.
Right.
Busby's firm's first offer was $100,000. This is my current theory on this, Sean.
Okay.
or a potential. This is a potential theory. Like, let's say if Deshaun were guilty of these allegations, I think it, if he is guilty, this is the scenario that I have in my head. Okay. That Deshaun perhaps was in a serious relationship and wanted to figure out a way to still have his fun, but without any suspicion on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So hypothetically, he maybe he has a dalliance or an experience at a massage that is consensual or something, but he thinks he's found the key to the secret kingdom. And this is my theory of a potential thing that happened. And he just started looking aggressively for it in a way that was extremely inappropriate, if these allegations are true.
Yeah.
Because there's that one snippet of a text conversation that we saw from Quincy Avery where he was asking one of the women to send her professional Instagram account so he could show Deshaun's girlfriend that she was a legitimate massage
That's
therapist.
Right, yeah. I'm glad you
Which
pointed
is, it's
that out.
It's a lot easier to explain I'm going to get a massage than it is I'm going to do anything else.
Yeah, well, especially when you play football. It would be easy for a regular guy to explain. It should be super easy for Deshaun to point to needing a massage. He gets hit 50 times every Sunday.
Right, right. Hey, I got to, honey, baby. This is the way I have to. So that hypothetical scenario would be just in this strategy for keeping everything discreet and quiet from his girlfriend. I would say that strategy, if that's what it was resoundingly unsuccessful.
It was ineffective.
I think at this point, I don't know, maybe he's in the point where like, no, honey, this is all legal strategy. I know Harden is saying that those were consensual sexual acts, but it's all legal strategy, okay?
Boy.
We're just giving a little to get some more.
Those would be some interesting conversations to listen to for sure. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Shifting gears, Jadeveon Clowney made it official. He is a Cleveland Brown 1 year after the Browns reportedly offered him 3 years, $57 million. And he said, nope, I'm going to go to the Titans for 1 year, up to $13 million. And we know how that went. Zero sacks, tore his meniscus, and now he signs with the Browns, Seth. 1 year, up to $10 million. Here's Clowney, happy to be a Cleveland Brown.
One. I know I stopped playing last season because of a meniscus. So I'm glad I did when I did stop. It didn't get worse. I went into getting surgery. But I feel great now. I'm looking forward to this season. It proves guys that I'm back healthy and I still can dominate in this league. So that's what I'm here to prove this year.
So Clowney now gets to play opposite Myles Garrett.
Yeah, and I think that's where Clowney needs to be, is somewhere where he can work with a complimentary player, somebody that, or a crew of complimentary players. And he's on a much better defensive front in Cleveland than he was in Tennessee last year, where they were just an atrocious front seven. It was a bad defense. So I think at this point, everybody knows what Clowney is. He's a guy that when he's healthy can be a very impactful player. He's very good against the run. He provides a presence as a pass rusher. He's just really bad at finishing at the quarterback.
Yeah.
So he gets the quarterback pressures, he gets quarterback hits at times, but he just doesn't get the quarterback down a lot. But as a difference maker, he makes a very big difference when he's healthy. But that's the other side of it too, is when is he healthy and
yeah,
can you rely on him to be healthy? The thing I would worry about him with the meniscus was that when Clowney had his meniscus surgery a few years back, that's when he got the microfracture.
Yeah.
Remember?
His rookie year.
And that was a big deal. And it's kind of weird that the team ever released that information, because microfractures aren't that uncommon these days.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a bad rap because so many times a guy at the end of his career might try microfracture as a last resort. So people kind of think, oh, you got microfracture, and nobody ever comes back from that. They do it a lot more these days, and guys do come back from it. But for whatever reason, the Texans chose to disclose that. So I guess my question this time around would be, all right, how bad is this meniscus issue compared to the previous one? Is it the same one? All those kinds of things. What's the likelihood he's going to be healthy this year? And I think that's going to be that'll be the question moving forward for him. I would imagine Clowney, for the rest of the time he plays in the NFL, it'll be short-term deals with a lot of incentives, you know, based on playing time, perhaps. And I don't know. It seems like Clowney's pretty cool with that. He seems like a man of the. He seems like a man that wants to maybe just, you know, have a little sampling of various geographical parts of the country.
Well, he was the number one overall pick, and even with the rookie wage scale that's come in place the last decade or so, he still made a ton of money compared to the average human being, and he's made a ton of money compared to most football players, even with some of the missed out potential and with some of what I would say, you know, in retrospect, missteps contractually. Like in retrospect, he should have taken the Cleveland offer last year. He would have had 3 years, $57 million instead of 1 year, $10 million this year. But he made number one overall pick money back in 2014. Like he ain't hurting for money is my guess. Here's what I find interesting, Seth.
His career earnings, so since we're on that, he's made I think he's made $63 million. Yeah.
Okay.
So he's doing all right.
Yeah, the lights remain on in the Clowney household. So I think what's interesting, I read an article yesterday from Jason Lloyd, who is he's the editor of the Cleveland corner of the Athletic universe, theathletic.com. And he wrote a pretty lengthy article about Clowney coming to the Browns and kind of listed out all the reasons to be concerned. Here's what I found interesting, and as a Texan fan, probably a little frustrating, is that the further away we get from the trade of Clowney to Seattle, which at the time was not a good trade. Like, I know in retrospect, there's this validation that's gone on with that trade. Like, see, O'Brien knew what he was doing. Clowney's a journeyman now, and he only... No. The Texans botched that because the value for Clowney, they should have gotten more for him in that moment. They should have gotten way more for him if they traded him before the draft that year.
Yeah, and remember, Brian Gain was partly responsible for
that too.
That's the whole... there's at least one theory, or with the timing, is that Clowney could have had Frank Clark's contract up in Kansas City. That if Brian Gain had been more aggressive, perhaps they could have traded Clowney to Kansas City. Who knows? But that was the kind of value at that time, with Clowney coming off a stretch of being healthy and being very productive.
Yeah, so here's the paragraph real quick in this article. It says, it should be a warning that both the Texans and Seahawks passed on the opportunity to give him big money even in his healthier days. Houston elected to trade him to Seattle for a package that included Jacob Martin, former Browns bust Barkevious Mingo, and a third-round pick. In other words, Seth, the further away we get from that deal and the more Clowney bounces from team to team, there's almost this reverse validation going on. Like, see, O'Brien knew. He traded him for only this, this, and that. He knew something back then, and it's like, no, he still should have gotten more. And you're right. Brian Gain should have gotten way more for Clowney in that very same offseason.
Well, it's like with every O'Brien deal, you look at each individual deal and you can make excuses or find reasoning behind it. It's the sum total where every step along the way you have to make excuses or find reasoning for it or what have you. But with the Clowney one especially, though, I would say that the ham-handedness of that one was Bill O'Brien acting like, hey, we want Clowney to be here, but hey, he's got to come in and sign. Like, they're almost trying to dupe him into coming in and signing the tender, and then they were going to trade him off to Miami.
Yeah.
Like, Clowney played Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby there. Clowney just said, I'm like, hold on a second now. Now, he got what he wanted, which was Clowney in that situation was that Seattle agreed that they wouldn't franchise tag him again if they had him on there. It ultimately didn't pay off for him, but like in the moment, Clowney got what he wanted.
Yeah, Clowney would have been better off with them franchising him after last year. He would have gotten 1 year $19 million instead of 1 year $13 million from Tennessee.
But this will be the first time in 3 years that he's had a supporting cast around him.
Yeah.
Like other guys that take some attention. When he was in Seattle, he was the only guy. In Tennessee last year, especially because the defensive tackle there got injured, he was like one of the only guys or the only guy, where now there's a whole lot of other guys to create some single block opportunities for Clowney.
The Astros had a bunch of guys thrown into the COVID protocol contact tracing, and it really crippled the lineup last night. Should the Astros have even played in that game? One prominent Astro says, we shouldn't have even been playing last night. We'll let you hear it next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.